It is 6:30. We will go ahead and get started. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everyone on the commission that could be here. We have a couple of new commissioners with us on the commission. New Commissioner Jacob Kapp could not be with us tonight and is excused, but we have new Commissioner Scott Jones with us. So welcome to you. We're glad to have you here. Thank you for your application and for your interest in working with us and working with the city. I was listening in when you introduced yourself in City Council. And if you don't mind, would you tell us a little bit about yourself? I thought it was really great to hear how long range you've been a citizen here.
Sure.
Do I push the button? You push the button and it goes green, yeah.
The new guy. I moved to North Salt Lake in 1967, lived on Mason Lane, just above Orchard Drive, for 15 years. And then, I've lived a few places between that, Weininger's, Gary Way, and now Liberty Road. So I've been here most all my life. And I love North Salt Lake. I started my business here 30 years ago and sold that a few years back to Bish's RV. So that's my background. I'm an RV guy, I guess. RV guy. I was.
A little sticky, okay. Thank you. Well, we are glad to have you here, and Planning Commission is a great place to be and a great place to work. I've been here for 7 years, many years, and it is really interesting to kind of watch the tapestry get woven, where we try and like venerate the past and celebrate the future, but keep it moving in these seats that most of us, we will be here and move in and out of. And so it's kind of the concept that the Planning Commission is its own entity, and we come in and kind of drive it for a couple of years. So we're glad to have you on board and hope you feel welcome, and we're glad to have you here. So thank you. And then we will move to public comment, if there's any public comment. No comment from Dee today. All right, and then we are going to do our 2026 appointment of the chair and vice chair. So we need a nomination for chair.
Commissioner Marsh, I'd like to nominate Bree Larson for chair.
And do we have a second?
Commissioner Jorgensen, I second.
Thank you. I will accept the nomination so we can move to, we can do them both at the same time. Look at this. This is effective. Okay, so we need a nomination for a vice chair. If somebody has a nomination.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I nominate Ryan Holbrook as the vice chair.
Okay, and do we have a second?
I'll second that.
And
Commissioner Stone.
Ryan, do you accept the nomination?
I accept the nomination.
Fantastic. All right, so then we can move to the joint motion for chair and vice chair together. That can't be by me or Ryan.
Okay. This is Commissioner Stone. I move that the Planning Commission appoint Brianna Larson as the 2026 Planning Commission chair, and that also, I don't have to say I move again, right? And okay, and that Ryan Holbrook is the vice chair of 2026 Planning Commission.
Thank you, Commissioner Stone. And do we have a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Great. Thank you. So we are appointed for the 2026 year. Thank you, everybody. Is there any, Sherry, do we want to do any okay. Never mind. Sorry. Okay. We will just move to agenda item 4, consideration of a request to amend the general development plan for Clifton Place South PUD. And the applicant is Brighton Homes. And are you Brighton Homes? Thank you for being here with us tonight. And Sherry, thank you.
Okay. I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on this because it's been a long time since we've had this before us. And I also wanted to give our new commissioners a little bit of a primer on P districts and how that works. So you will have noticed that in the staff report. So Clifton Place is at 1100 North and Redwood Road. Clifton Place North is under construction right now, and Clifton Place South is on the south side, and that is the item that's on your agenda tonight. So just as a refresher, the process for a P district and the general development plan, what happens at the very beginning, we have a public hearing on the request for the rezone to the P district, and then we also review the general development plan, which is like a concept plan. And then you make a recommendation on the general development plan to the city council. The city council, once they approve the general development plan, then that gives the developer the entitlement to move forward and either proceed with a preliminary plat or a site plan, depending on the type of development that they're doing. Now, in the past, the Planning Commission and City Council acted on preliminary plan, but now with the new state code and our new subdivision ordinance, only the Planning Commission can act on subdivision plans. The City Councils are not in that, because it was kind of always just a rubber stamp thing, so the legislature said, no, let's not make people go through this, let's just have one meeting with the Planning
Sherry, Commission. Just a quick question on that, sorry to interrupt.
Yep.
Depending on, you mentioned something that either the preliminary subdivision plat or the site plan, depending on the development agreement, where would the differentiation be on that?
Depending on the type of development. So if they're doing a for sale product where they're going to be selling individual lots, then they'll do a preliminary plat. If they're doing, let's say it's an apartment building that isn't going to have separate lots, it's just already on an existing lot, then there's no subdivision, so they just do a site plan.
Because they're not doing condo plats or they're
right, they're not doing a okay. condo plat, they're not doing townhouses, they're just doing, you're not doing for sale units.
Okay.
It's going to be held in common by one property owner who's going to rent all of the units on the property.
Okay, thanks. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. That's a good clarification. And so after you get the preliminary plat or site plan, that's when you make the formal recommendation to the P for the P district rezone. Then that goes to the City Council, and based upon the preliminary plan or the site plan, where we've worked out all of the minutia of conditions that we want on the development, that those terms are then incorporated into a development agreement. The City Council then will approve the development agreement and the final rezone, and that's when the rezone takes a place, is when that development agreement is signed and executed. So sometimes we'll go and we have City Council act on the rezone, but the ordinance doesn't take effect until we've signed and executed that development agreement, and sometimes that takes a little bit of time because there's all sorts of other documents we have to come up with, and then the developer's working on their financing, so they don't want to sign the development agreement, or maybe they have to close on the property, which is kind of one of the things that happened with Clifton Place, is they were buying these two properties, the north and the south, from different entities, different property owners, and so they had different closing dates, which is why we separated them. But I'll get to that just a little bit more. And then once the development agreement is executed, the developer can move forward with their final plat or with their construction of the infrastructure and the buildings. So I wanted to give you the Cliff Notes for Clifton Place. So back in July of 2022 was when we held the public hearing on the rezone, and it was for both the north and the south property. So we've already considered that. You've already made your recommendations to the City Council on the rezone. You made a recommendation on the general development plan. And then on the 17th or the 19th of July in that year in 2022, the City Council approved the general development plan. In September, they returned with the preliminary subdivision plan. And they at that time, they had one for north and south. They hadn't really worked out when they were going to close on the properties or how they were going to take that down. So they were still both included in that. And then the Planning Commission made the formal recommendation on the P zone for the north and the south. In October of 2022, when we went to execute the development agreement, we realized that the first ordinance that the City Council had adopted had both the north parcel and the south parcel included. But they had an agreement on the purchase of the south property that they weren't going to close on it for 2 or 3 years. And we can't execute a development agreement with a developer who doesn't own the property. We can only execute it with the property owner. So they have to close on the property before we execute that. So that's when we realize, we need to redo the ordinance and only have a new ordinance, repeal the old ordinance, and have the new ordinance only address the north property. So that's the next steps that we need to take on the south property, is to have it go to the City Council and have them adopt the new ordinance that will then take this property into the P district. So between 2022, there were some situations with the property owner on the north side where they actually let their due diligence period expire because they were trying to negotiate a better purchase price, was my understanding at the time, and the sellers were not interested in that, and so Brighton had let their purchase contract expire. And then the property owners tried to shop the property out to several different developers who had come into the office, and they wanted to do five-story apartment buildings, or they wanted to do, oh, there was the one that wanted to do wholesale, bring in wholesale cars from Canada and at that site, and we were like, yeah, we don't really want you to do that there. But after a while, when the sellers couldn't find a buyer that would pay the price that they wanted, then they went back to Brighton and entered into a new purchase agreement. I don't know what the terms of that was. It doesn't really matter to me or to anyone here except for Brighton and the sellers. But they finally entered into a purchase agreement and closed on the property. And so in May of 2024, they came back because they had wanted to make some changes to the layout for the north side. So we amended the general development plan. You recommended that in May of 2024 to the City Council with a little bit different preliminary plan than they had back in 2022. The unit mix they had, as I remember it, was as you've seen the units that have been built, they have the units on the end that are just two-story, and then the units in the middle were three stories. And I think that when, if I remember correctly, back in 2022, they were all three-story townhomes. And so this was a new product they wanted to change, and then that changed the layout. And so that's why they had to amend the general development plan for the north side. After the City Council approved the amended general development, we executed the development agreement, and they... By that time in 2024, we had changed the subdivision ordinance so that the Planning Commission approved preliminary plans and then staff approves final plat. And so the plats for subdivisions didn't get reviewed by the City Council anymore. So that's why if you see earlier, you made a recommendation in 2022 on the preliminary plan. And then in 2024, you just made the approval of the preliminary plan. And then on October in 2024, that's when we realized we needed to change the ordinance and make sure it only applied to the north side. So now they have closed on the south property, or I assume they're about to close if they haven't yet. But I wanted to show you the general development plan. So this is the one that was approved back in 2022. They came in and amended the north one in 2024. And some of the... Just to let you know what happened on the north side, when their first general development plan, they had a total of 74 units. When they went to the different building type with the two stories on the end, they take up more space, and so they actually reduced their units down to 68. So they lost 6 units in the general development change on the north. And you can see what the general development plan was approved for on the south, kind of see the orientation of the commercial up there in the left-hand corner. They had some facilities, amenities for the property owners on both sides down there in the lower right-hand corner of the south parcel. Lower left-hand corner, excuse me. My other left, my other right, whatever. So this is the proposal today that they would like to make an amendment to the general development plan. So previously, they had 111 units in this and 278 parking spaces. That was a parking ratio of 2.5 parking spaces per unit, which is a quarter space more than we require per unit under our code. One of the things that you'll note in the new, or the proposal tonight, so they have reduced the number of units from 111 to 102. And the parking has increased dramatically to 366 spaces. So they've done a better job getting additional guest parking, but I want to just make note that one of the changes that occurred in last year's state code update, the legislature says that we used to say, okay, if you have a tandem two-car garage, so a single wide garage but two cars deep, we would only count that as one parking space because we're assuming that only one car is going to park in there and they're going to use the other half for storage or whatever. And the state legislature says, nope, you can't do that. Even if they're in tandem, if there's room for two cars in there, you have to count it as two cars. So 31 of these additional parking spaces that are accounted for in that 366 come from that. But beyond that, it still was a much higher increase in the parking facilities. And that number, the 366, does not count the 39 spaces that are around the commercial area. And then the commercial area, they've moved that up closer to Redwood Road, and they're going to do the exact same commercial that they were doing on the north side on this south parcel. So there are a few red lines on their general development plan that we just need to have them update before it goes to the city council. So the parking counts needed to be adjusted and to reflect what's actually on the plat. They've added a little parking area by their amenity down there in the lower left-hand corner. If you look at this, you can see the units that have the tandem garages, because I highlighted them in green, so that you would know which ones were the tandem garages. So there are 31 that have tandem garages. Every other unit has a two-car wide garage, and then you can see that some of the units have full driveways and some don't. So this is their proposed landscape plan. It's fairly standard. They'll have to move the trail that's along the curb right now. When we had a grant to install the trail, we could only get an easement from the old property owner to put it right against the curb. So it'll actually need to be taken out and moved into the middle of 24 feet of landscaping behind the curb. So they'll remove that. And anyway, that's the landscaping plan. They have a good amount of landscaping. And then this is what the buildings look like. If you've driven by there, you've seen the construction that they have right now. They're very nice quality.
They look great.
Pretty standard. Really traditional architecture is the way I would probably, maybe a little craftsman-y, but a nice architecture. I think it makes a good entrance to the development. So some of the request in the changes to the amended general development plan was, of course, the reduction in number of units, which I didn't think you'd have any issue with them reducing the number of units. The street and site layout has changed. They're adding the pickleball courts along with the swimming pool. There's no clubhouse. There is a small restroom facility, changing room, but there's not a meeting place per se. One thing that they have asked, and I'll let them address this if they would like to after I've made this presentation, they've requested to do a site obscuring fence along Redwood Road. The DRC is not in favor of that change to the development agreement. There are a number of reasons why. First one was from the PD, because they like the line of sight when people are, you know, in these types of multifamily complexes, like to be able to see through the fence so that they can see if 3 o'clock in the morning, if there's something nefarious going on or car burglaries or whatever, they can kind of see into that, and people can't run away on foot and go behind a fence and then not be able to see them if they had an incident happen. The other, from a aesthetic perspective for us, is a solid fence along Redwood Road creates a attraction for graffiti, or those fences deteriorate. Kids throw things, especially if they're vinyl, but we wouldn't want vinyl anyway, even if you did want to approve it. Because if you drive down any street that has a vinyl fence and get along the sidewalk, and you can see where the kids come along and punch their hands through them or throw rocks at them, and they become very brittle. And so we are recommending from the DRC that we stay with the previous decision for the decorative metal fence with the masonry columns. And the other, with the fence being not sight obscuring, it leaves opportunities for connections to the trails. Because what we want is people to be able to leave these units and use Redwood Road Trail to go down to Lee's Marketplace or any of the other businesses on Redwood Road and really integrate in part of the community. And then as far as red lines, the only thing that we have are to add some pedestrian connections to the general development plan. They show them on the landscape plan, but they're not shown on the general development plan, and then I want to go back to this parking. So the little area that they've added for the parking on Cutler Drive for the amenities, it needs to be reconfigured a little bit, that area, so that that driveway is across directly from that street that goes west. We can't move that driveway further towards the stop sign. It needs to be moved back and be in line with that other street. So there's a little bit of work to do there. They'll probably rearrange where the pickleball courts are or where the pool, but we think they can do that fairly easier. And they might lose a couple of parking spaces at the pool, but it's a safety issue. And the city engineer says you can't be that close to the intersection, to the stop sign with that driveway. So that is recommended as a condition. And then just to update those parking counts. From this point forward, you'll make a recommendation tonight on the general development plan. The city council will move to approve the general development plan. At that point, then the developer can prepare the preliminary plat, because they will be just selling these. These are for sale units. And once we have that plat, then we will come back to the city, to the planning commission, where you will approve that preliminary plat. And then once the preliminary plat is approved, we go back to the city council, where they will officially adopt the ordinance and the development agreement. And we need that preliminary plan because it becomes part, an exhibit of the general, of the development agreement. And it, you know, the terms of what we decide on, how many parking they should have, those are all the kind of things that show on that preliminary plan that we need to incorporate into the development agreement. So that's why that's the order. And then once the development agreement is signed, then they can move forward with preliminary plat and their construction of the infrastructure and start pulling building permits for the townhomes. So the DRC is making a favorable recommendation for approval on this, and with the findings and conditions that I have in the staff report for you. Do you have any questions for me?
Thank you, Sherry. Any questions for Sherry?
No, thanks, Sherry. That was good walk down memory lane. A lot to that story, a lot more than I remembered. Did we get any feedback from the applicant on the tweaks that the DRC wants to make? Is there any reason for any of that to be discussed? I mean, they all seem, you know, well-conceived, and I certainly don't see any problem with those, but I'm just curious, was there any dialogue to date, or do they want to address that?
I think that would be a question for them if they want to address the question of the fence.
That'd be great if you guys would join us at the microphone. Does anybody want to come up? We're going to be so nice to you. This is never happens in Planning Commission where you're like, we're thinking about building less units. How do you guys feel about that? Go ahead, Ron.
Any reaction or feedback relative to the modifications that the staff is recommending?
Honestly, the staff has been really good to work with in this process. I feel like we have a pretty mutual understanding of what the city wants, and we're willing to provide that. The pushback on the fence really comes from consideration of the five residents that would be immediately adjacent to Redwood Road. And beyond that, there's not really much of a, we don't have a strong opinion other than our sales agents and people we've talked to that have moved in the community feel reasonably strongly enough to bring it up in front of you guys that a precast fence in that location would be preferred. It costs us more money to do it that way. We're paying for it. We feel like we should have somewhat of a say in that. I totally understand the police department's concerns, and we're not going to die on this hill, but it was something that was specifically asked of me to request as part of this application. Beyond that, the alignment of the street makes total sense and is an oversight. We feel like this is a well-amenitized community. It's obviously parked well, and that's based on past experiences. I think this is kind of more suburban than urban, and we're trying to accommodate that fit and feel for the community. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's generally my comments on it.
I appreciate your comment, and I'll just remark, I did drive down and see what was going on with North Clifton, and again, it's a beautiful work. I really like it. I think this is going to be very, very consistent and similar, so it's very nice. I did have one other question, and maybe I'll ask it for the applicant if that's okay. With On 1100 North, there's an Enbridge gas facility, like a regulator station. I can see that that's carved out. I'm assuming that all just stays, but do they do anything on the fencing, or do you get stuck with whatever they have? It doesn't seem like it was chain link, but I really didn't study it very closely. I just kind of glanced at it. What's that? It's vinyl.
It's kind of an 8-foot beige vinyl fence is what I remember in that location.
Anyway, again, my compliments on a very nice development.
Yeah, to touch on that, they're planning on purchasing a portion of our soon-to-be property to expand their facility. There was dialogue around moving the facility, and it got more complicated and kind of ruined the site layout, and this is where we landed, just working with the city staff again on it. So,
thank you. Would you mind stating your name just for our meeting minutes?
John Blocker, Brighton Homes.
Thank you so much. I just, out of curiosity, so what was the impetus to come down in unit numbers? Like, what was the motivation to shift this around?
Not to get too into the weeds, but when you build too many of the same product type, your buyer pool gets more narrow. And so to have a more diverse mix of product, you get a more diverse buyer pool, and your sales per month increase. And so, although we're losing units, it was close to a one-for-one on how we viewed the project on its performance. And we really do like this layout a lot better. We think they're just a lot more livable and look nicer. This was a big decision why it took so long to bring this back to you guys was we wanted to see how the North did, and we're going to make that decision contingent upon that, seeing where the approvals were, and it did well, and we're moving forward with the same plan.
That's great. The North looks so good. Just compliments to that development. It really does look really good and fits in the area and the neighborhood really well, so
also
very much appreciate that. Any other questions for applicant or Sherry?
Is the square footage of commercial space unchanged?
I think that was an acreage thing.
So, thanks for bringing that up, because I didn't want to just mention that. So before, we had just zoned a lot, and on the previous general development plan, the acreage for the lot was like 1.11 acres, and this, the way it's laid out, is like 0.87 acres, but they're sharing half of the roads, the access roads, with the development. They're sharing parking. So if you see this road that comes in off of 1100 North, on the east side of the road, those are 13 spaces that are dedicated to the commercial. On the south side of that are 19 spaces that are going to be shared between the commercial and the residential uses. So those 19 spaces will be able to be used by the residents after 7 p.m. and nice. On the weekends. And that is a model that Brighton has used in these development across the street here, and actually works really, really well. Having lived over there for 2 years, mm-hmm. recently moved, but I can attest to that. That actually works really well to have that shared parking in the evenings and on the weekends. One thing I did want to just mention, I was doubtful that people would park two cars in a tandem garage. Having lived over there for 2 years, I can attest to it that they actually do. Most of them park two cars in the single wide, two car deep. I'd watch people, they would shuffle their cars. My neighbor would park two cars in there, and the husband would come out when the wife got home from work, and then she'd pull her car out. So then he'd pull his car back in. So when he left in the morning before her, she didn't have to get up. And so people just make it work. The people who buy those units understand, and they're either a single person that have one car, or if they're a couple, they make it work. And the ones that are single wide, the tandem ones, those are just two bedrooms, right? Yeah, so it's not like there's less likelihood to have three or four cars in a unit like that.
So is it, back to the commercial, is it fair to say shrunk in acreage, but square footage stayed the same?
Square footage of the building is about the same, yeah. Okay.
So Commissioner Marsh, along the same lines, Sherry, help me understand the process on the commercial approval. So like this is all rolled up in the P district. What is the process then for when a business wants to come in? Do they, like, help me understand that.
So the way this will work, when we do the preliminary and final plat, where I've kind of drawn on the red line there, you can kind of see dividing the half of that road and then up the first road that runs east and west. That'll become a lot, and then the developer will build that building and lease those spaces out. Or if they want to condominiumize the spaces in there, then they will come in and do a plat amendment or bring that when they do the plat to do it in condominium units if they want to sell those units. Because they've been discussing on the north side whether or not they want to create those into condominium commercial units or if they want to lease them up. So then they will seek out the site plan approval for that, and that's where we'll actually review the architecture of that building and, you know, the specifics of that lot itself.
And is that handled administratively by staff, or does that come before PC again?
It'll still come before PC, yes. Okay. Site plans for commercial uses all come to before this for the Planning Commission.
And just so everyone knows, the plan is to sell this.
Yeah. And that's Nick.
Yeah.
With Brighton.
And we even get a review on if it's a big tent.
What's that?
We even get a review of it if it's a big tent.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not a big tent.
I have a question about parking. So I'm seeing these 19 shared, and then across kind of that line, there's those extra guest spaces. So in the count for the guest parking, is it also the parking spaces by, like, the dog park in that bottom corner where we get the 54?
Yeah, so those can all be used by guests or the people that live in the development. I think what happens, you might have somebody who's living in 267 and they got a couple kids and they got their floaties and they don't want to walk over to the pool, so they'll put their kids in the car and drive over, and they have a place to park now. Instead of being out on Cutler Drive, they'll be able to park by the pool while they are there with their children.
So
that's kind of the idea.
I mean, street parking, I'm assuming you could on Cutler, right?
Yes.
And then on any of these little streets, I'm assuming...
No.
No, okay.
Yeah, they'll be too narrow to park on those.
Okay.
Does anyone want to have any conversation about the fence? The decorative metal fencing, or are we in agreement with the DNC with that?
Definitely in agreement with the DRC.
And just to clarify, you were asking for fencing for 5 houses, not the entire stretch of Redwood Wood. What was the specific ask?
So it would be from the southern property line to where the commercial starts is where the fencing would be. As far as if it were site obscuring.
Sorry, say the first part again, the 7 what?
So between unit 131 and down to 267. So it wouldn't be site obscuring in front of the commercial part. It was just the part in front of
just along the residential side. They want a solid precast along that stretch, but not on the commercial.
Yeah, and we've went away from that in our ordinance where we don't allow those things. You know, we don't like chain link, and we don't want really side obscuring fences that are closer to the road because it really creates that tunnel effect.
Sorry, we were figuring out where all the fencing was currently on Redwood. Any other comment on that or discussion on that?
Is there any other fencing on Redwood?
There is one block fencing, and then we've switched to metal in the... The more recent developments have gone to the metal.
The oldest one is the one at 900 North.
Yeah.
What's that?
Hampton Place, right?
Hampton Place,
also built by Brighton.
And the police do constantly complain about it.
They do a lot of building.
The police do constantly complain about that fence.
And it has not weathered. It does not.
The solid fence.
Because what are
they can't see through it.
Isn't Hampton just to the south of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on the right side?
Yeah.
I had to pull up the Google map to
see that. And then when we did Morella, which is in the Lee's Marketplace, that was the reason why we went to the decorative metal, was so that it, we didn't have that same issue anymore. We just, there's a lot of issues when they get tagged, and then it can start looking run down. And so
it also, I feel like, visually helps tear from such rough industrial into the neighborhood, where it doesn't feel like compound, and it feels like it's tearing into, like, and now this is residential. So I've really appreciated that, the fencing shift along Redwood there too. I think it makes it just feel softer as it moves into the residential. Any other comments or discussion, or we can move towards a motion?
Commissioner Olberg, I'm prepared to make a motion.
I got a shortcut.
Commissioner Olberg, I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council the approval of the proposed amended general development plan for Clifton Place South PUD with the findings and conditions as outlined in the staff report.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. And do we have a second?
Second, way to go.
Thank you, Commissioner Jorgensen. And any comment or discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 And any opposed? All right, then it passes. Thank you for being here. I think you're our next applicant too, so thank you for being and staying here with us. And for the work you're doing down there, it looks really great. All right, we are moving to agenda item 5, consideration of a request to amend the general development plan for Village Station Lot 11, and same applicants with us, and Sherry.
Okay, so this is where Village Station is located. So this is the lower south portion of Eaglewood Village development that started back in 2007. This is the site where one apartment building was going to be, and so this is the proposal. Just to let you know, when buildings 1 and 2 were built there, just south of the roundabout there at Eagle Gate, we did some design work and put parking in the middle of the street. They were for traffic calming. We were trying to discourage gravel trucks from going through there, and as the development started going and the improvements were made and we opened it up back up because the construction was done, we saw a return of the gravel trucks going through this location. They were running over the curbs because the radiuses weren't big enough for them, and really weren't in, it wasn't intended to be a good access for the gravel pits, because pedestrians and people living in an area, you really don't want to have a lot of gravel trucks going in and out of the development that way. So the City Council decided to close that road. They put some barriers, concrete barriers, down at the end of Orchard Drive there before you get to the frontage road and Highway 89. And so it's been closed for a couple years now, just so you know. And then working with I-15 on their reconstruction plans, they're planning on disconnecting that road in the first place completely and cul-de-sacking it, because they're going to make all of Highway 89 will be on the east side of I-15. So right now when you're going south on Highway 89, you know how it splits and you go over, if you're going south, you go over a flyover and then you get on the freeway that way, or you go on it and stay on Beck Street, right? So all of Beck Street, or the Highway 89, is going to be moved both north and south on the east side of I-15. There'll be no flyover there. So that will provide access to the gravel pits improved once that is done. But we won't, they don't want to have that road, Highway 89, connect to Eagle Gate at that, or at Orchard Drive at that location anymore. So they, UDOT plans to discontinue that road. So that's what brought us to part of this application. So just to give you a little history on this one, this took me a little bit longer to dig out all of the history so that I could make sure I was clear what we'd done on this. But back in 2007, that is when we had the first development agreement for Eaglewood Village. During 2013 to 2020, the construction of the Eaglewood Lofts apartments took place, and the views at Eaglewood Village, which is the subdivision that Commissioner Holbrook lives in on Eagle Ridge Drive as you're going up from the Eagle Ridge roundabout, the first development on the right when you get kind of halfway up the hill. In 2019, the Planning Commission recommended an amendment to the general development plan for Village Station. The previous developers wanted to sell the rest of the development. They had had a lot of plans to do, like, a tremendous amount of commercial on this was in the original development agreement, like something like 200,000-300,000 square feet of commercial, and there just never has materialized a market for that much commercial at this site. As we've tried to do economic development there, you just don't have the housetop, the rooftops to attract the big box developments or office buildings. Office buildings kind of went soft after 2020 anyway, with everybody working from home. So they came in, Brighton was going to purchase it. They came in and asked the city council if they'd be willing to amend the development agreement and put apartments south of Eagle Gate Drive. So that's where the stop gas station is, that's Eagle Gate. And that was approved in 2019 in August. And so they were approved for 323 apartment units, 103 apartments or a hotel building right next to the stop, north of the stop. It would be that way. And then the commercial lots where you see the Starbucks, and then there's still another vacant lot for the second restaurant pad there on that site. In 2020, the Planning Commission recommended the site plan for buildings 1 through 3. So if we go back to this, you can see the building on the lower right-hand corner. That's building 1. Building 2 is across the street to the west. Building 3 was directly south of that. And building 4 is on this parcel that's for consideration tonight in the yellow. You made a, the City Council approved the site plans for building 1 through 3, and we did a partial vacation of Orchard Drive for some additional on-street parking, but put on-street parking that's privately held so that they had to maintain it, not in the city right away. In 2022, they came and did a site plan for buildings 4 and 5, and those were approved. And then they approached the City Council last year in February and had a discussion with them about making another amendment to the development plan to, instead of building a 3-story apartment building with 74 units, to build townhome but rental units. So these will not be for sale units. They'll still be rented and rented as a part of the whole Village Station development with those apartments, and they will have access to all of the same amenities. So again, this was the original general development plan. Well, not the original. This was the amended Brighton development development agreement for Village Station. And it's gone through some changes, obviously, over the years. And then this is their proposal right now. And you can see by this, what this is doing is we're actually proposing to vacate Orchard Drive south of the roundabout, because it's going to be dead-ended anyway by I-15. We closed it a couple years ago because we don't want traffic going through the neighborhood to access the gravel pit. And so the proposal is to vacate that portion of Orchard Drive. We would be, it would basically just become part of the parking lot for the apartments, and build 60 townhome apartment units. In order to not lose as many units in building 4, they're requesting to increase that building from 60 units to 74 units by just doing some reconfiguration of the units. So doing a few less 3 bedrooms and making them 1 or 2 bedrooms, to use the same floor plan, but, well, not the same footprint at the site. So this is the proposal for this, and I'll go with this. So you can see they're using the same materials that they've used in the Eaglewood Village, same kind of architecture. So it'll match and feel like it's part of the same development, but this is just a different rental unit type for people who don't want to, you know, be in the third story walk up or they want the three stories themselves. So we've worked with them for about a year now on this architecture. They've gone back and forth with the DRC and revised some of these. They've worked with the fire department so that they could meet the requirements for fire apparatus roads and not being too tall and needing a fire apparatus road that's wider. So again, just to highlight that, building four had 94 units. It'll be replaced with the 60 townhome units. Building three will go from 60 units to 74 units. Vacation of the Orchard Drive south of the roundabout. The steps from here will be, if you vote to recommend the amended general development plan, it'll go to the city council on February 3rd. The reason that it's not going next week is because in a road vacation requires a public hearing to be held by the city council. So instead of it being held by the planning commission, the state code requires that road vacations are held, their public hearings are held before the city council. So the city council would hold that public hearing on the street vacation, and then they will approve the general development plan and the amended development agreement. At that point, and they will be able to proceed to the next step, which would be a site plan approval and a plat amendment, because when they when we vacate the street, that vacation has to be added to their subdivision plat, so it's not just a new parcel hanging out there. It needs to become part of that. So it's the order of is vacate the street, do a plat amendment, and then approve the preliminary or the final site plan for the development. And then they can start construction on it. Concurrently with that, they're doing a geotech review right now.
What is the geotech hazard review looking at specifically?
Yeah. So there's some rockfall hazard. If you remember when we approved building one, there were some big kind of boulders that are kind of up there on the slope. The geotech for that area required that they go up there and take out the biggest of the boulders, you know, dislodge them and get them out of there, and then build a rockfall fence. So there's a rockfall fence along the property that if rocks do come down, they will be smaller in size, but they'll also be caught by that fence. If something were to happen and there are rocks that fall, then we would have the fence evaluated by an engineer and make sure that they need to, how they need, if it needs to be fixed. Because presuming that if big rocks come down, it might bend some of the supports, and those might need to be repaired over the years. The other thing they're looking at is just the toe of the slope, because if you look on the site plan, you can kind of see that these units at the south are close to the toe of the slope, but they're not cutting into the slope. They're actually going to do a little bit of fill at the toe of the slope, which buttresses the slope, so it actually makes it more stable, but we still want to have our geotech review that, and that's going on right now. They can get ahead of that and get that done, so it takes a little more time, so we've been working on that with our geotech and their geotech for a couple of months now, and we expect to have that done pretty quickly. We had a scoping meeting, and there weren't too many concerns from our geotech of things we need to look at on this, aside from the rockfall hazard.
Can I ask a second question on the geotechnical? So, a couple. This is all incremental studies above and beyond what was done for the buildings that now exist. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. And then also the fault runs right through there and surface rupture zone. And,
yes,
I mean, right,
so they'll
through
be looking
the middle
at that
of this,
too.
Right through the middle of this property, if I read the maps right, and it's less than 15,000-year-old fault.
Yep.
So it's considered active. So that, I know the city's code has got a lot of seismic considerations, so I'm assuming that's within
that
the scope
will be part of
the
geotech. Scope, yeah.
And then on the review of all the geotechnical work, the city has consultants.
We do.
And then does the city engineer review it prior to coming to Planning Commission as well, or just
yes.
the geotech?
So what happens is they apply for a geotech hazard review. We have a scoping meeting with our consultant, our geotech consultant, their geotech consultant, and the city engineer, and then myself. And the two geotechs talk to each other about, hey, here's what the data is from that we already know about in the studies in this area. These are the things we want to look at. They talk about all the parameters of the studies. They talk a lot of technical stuff that I don't want to know. It gets pretty complicated, but they go through that. Then that will send the developer's geotech out to do the specific studies and drill the boring holes and whatever our geotech has helped them scope out what we won't need them to look at. They'll write a report. The report comes into the city engineer. She then sends it to our geotech consultant who reviews it. It comes back to her with corrections or questions or things that they need to take a look at. It might be something like, hey, the slope has this coefficient of safety, blah, 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 and we need to know where you got that data from. How did you come up with that assumption, or did you look at this? And then their geotech will review those comments. They'll revise their report to address the comments. They'll go back to their geotech, and we'll just go back and forth like that until our geotech is satisfied that all issues that need to be addressed under our code are addressed. And then we can move forward with the final approvals.
Yeah, so it sounds like a robust process. I guess at the end of the day, you know, not my purview, I'm not the technical expert, but I just recognize that I think this location in particular has more risk than others, because you also have right on the very south end of it three high pressure pipelines, gas transmission pipelines, large diameter, that are crossing the fault in very close proximity to that. I know in probably all cases, but I can't swear to that, but in all cases, they've probably done special mitigation with low-density backfill and heavier pipe and things like that. But anyway, it would be an interesting trial if there was ever a fault rupture in this location.
Yeah. So those pipelines come down in the lower corner that you see here from the slope, and then they go across, I think, up through the UDOT parcel out to, you can see the pipeline, what do they call that, the pig station that they have on Highway 89, and it ties into that. So that's where that, but none of those pipelines will be under any buildings in this property, just so you know.
With this revised layout, it looks like maybe this is adding quite a bit of parking to building one. Is that correct?
Well, they're not adding any more than is already there. They will be sharing that parking if they need to, but all of these will also have two car garages.
So the parking I'm seeing at the top of the screen is already there?
It is, yeah.
But the original development plan called for a building where those parking stalls were? Okay.
Yeah. And so there's more on-street parking here that they're adding to the Orchard Drive part that we're vacating. And then the parking down between units 30 and 31. And then each one of these townhouses has a two-car wide garage. So people who rent these units will have two covered spaces each unit.
Question for you, Sherry. On there's no plat of building three with the reconfigured units. Are they... with the additional unit count there, is that still in the same footprint?
I need you to say that. I couldn't hear the first part.
Oh, sorry. So building three was being reconfigured with additional units, but it's not attached.
So,
and it's still just in the same footprint? They just reconfigure the interior?
Yes,
is that what you said earlier?
They're just going to reconfigure the interior. It'll stay in the same footprint.
Okay. Because I didn't see it on there. So I guess the other, with that little stretch of like center road parking, why was that not considered to like continue down? And I mean, I get with the closure and the road vacation and all that, but it just seems like it's an odd configuration.
That is one way you could go, but we didn't need through traffic anymore because we're closing the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one thing that we did want to maintain, and I forgot to mention, is at the south corner, you can kind of see where Orchard Drive will become an access road to their development and the parking lot. We're keeping a right-of-way for a trail, and they'll build the trail section from this development so that it'll continue out to the Highway 89 trail that we have already that goes down into Beck Street. And it's going to be that trail along Highway 89 will be rebuilt by UDOT with the expansion project and the relocation of Highway 89. And that's going to fix a whole bunch of the problems that we've had with that trail. We've had that trail is lower than the frontage road right now. And so when gravel trucks come out of the gravel pit, they're dumping gravel on the road because it spills. I mean, it comes out on their tires. It comes out of the trucks a little bit. But then when we have a storm, it washes all of that off of the street and down the little embankment onto the trail. And so then we have a trail that has a lot of gravel on it, and it's a safety hazard. So UDOT's actually going to raise the grade of that trail. And then that trail is actually going to continue when you hit Beck Street in Salt Lake County, and they'll build a whole new off-street trail that will go right into downtown on Salt Lake City. So you could ride a bicycle down Highway 89 and not have to be on Highway 89. You'd be separated from the traffic on a bike. And we have a lot of commuters that take that on bicycle commuters. So we're excited to see that.
And hopefully in a few years we get a green belt along Orchard that'll connect into it.
Right, exactly.
The spirit of Ted Knowlton is so happy about
long as we're, I'm on the committee. Sherry, as long as we're talking about UDOT, not to change the subject, but just quickly, are they going to put a light in on Eagle Ridge Drive where the gas station is? Because that's kind of a dangerous intersection, it sure seems.
So where the light will be is, it's actually where Orchard Drive would come into Highway 89. That's where the interchange will be with I-15. And so there will be a light right there. There will not be a light at Eagle Gate, but that will no longer be a speedway. Right now, when you're exiting I-15 and you're coming off Highway 89, people are still going freeway speeds, and they're coming up the hill. And then the accidents that we see at Eagle Ridge Drive are because those cars are coming so fast, and there's a little bit of a rise. And so they're coming up and not seeing that the people who are turning left to go up Eagle Ridge Drive are, they can't see the cars because they're down below that little rise. And so that's why we're having a lot of the accidents there. And so with having an intersection basically at the location where Orchard Drive right now goes in with the frontage road, that will slow all the traffic. Plus you won't have that off-ramp traffic. People come off the off-ramp to an exit, turn right, and then they'll have to stop at that light to turn left onto Highway 89, and the speeds will be reduced. They're also going to do some adjusting to the elevations of Highway 89 through that area a little bit.
Has UDOT released those maps?
Hmm?
Has UDOT released those maps?
They're on their EIS map.
Okay.
And so right now, we've been working the last, I would say, feels like 10 years, but I think it's only been a year and a half with Horrocks Engineering, who is the consultant for the EIS and the design of I-15 reconstruction. So we have monthly meetings, myself, city manager, and the city engineer, along with some of our public works people who are involved with utilities, to kind of go over that design. So now the place that they are now is that, the way I understand it, is that there are two firms that are bidding on the design build, to be the design build for the whole project. And they're working on their designs, which is they can still make some changes to the designs that Horrocks had approved. At the end of this year, we will know who will have that contract, and then they'll start construction on I-15 in early 2027. Now, will they start at the south end and North Salt Lake first, or will they start up in Farmington? We don't know any of that yet. It'll come in different phases. The way I understand it, they won't do, they'll rebuild, like they'll build our new interchange before they rebuild the 2600 South interchange, because they don't want two interchanges in a row under construction. So they may have a crew working on this interchange and then somebody working on one in Farmington if they're doing improvements on any of the others, right? So there's just, we don't know for sure what the order will be in the reconstruction. We'll know a little bit more once they've chosen the contractor, and then they'll do their analysis, and then they'll put out their work schedule.
So back to the trails piece, is there some, and this may be something that we may want to look at in the future, but requiring applicants to show like connections to trails, like kind of how we saw in the previous one of like, hey, there's this trail that like, is that, or in, how would we do that to incorporate potential designs that are, that come before the commission in the future that would then incorporate with the trails master plan, for example? Like, is that already being handled at DRC or?
It is, okay. Yeah. And so that's why this is in there, because we've made that consideration. Because we're okay. Like, hey, we really need to make sure we maintain a connection to that trail, and we already have the right of way. So instead of vacating the whole thing, we'll vacate it, but then we'll maintain a pedestrian easement. One of the things that the police chief asked for, and the fire too, was that at where the trail will leave their parking lot, that there would be bollards put there, so that in the event, let's say, knock on wood, building one was on fire and they needed to actually evacuate residents from the townhome areas or from building three, and you couldn't go north because there's fire trucks all over the road and they're doing whatever they're doing, then the police department could remove the bollards and direct traffic out across the trail. It'll be wide enough for a car. They don't want it built to for fire trucks to use or police to use permanently or any permanent access, but it will be a relief valve if in the event that something bad happened and you couldn't get out any other way. There are other ways out too. I just want to note, you could go through the parking lot for buildings 2 and 3 and get onto Eagle Gate Drive. So there, if it was building 2 or 3, you could go around building 1 and get onto Eagle Gate Drive, onto Orchard and up to Eagle Ridge. So there's many, many ways to exit this property and enter the property, but that's just one more safety valve that would be only with authorized use by the police department.
And then I'm going back a few years, so I'm hoping you can jog my memory. Is there some kind of relation between building 5, 6, and 7 in a timing standpoint of which have to be built first?
No.
Okay.
So we've already got the Starbucks, and then we are going to have, I think the constructing these and adding more rooftops will actually bring the other restaurant site on. The developer, as far as lot 5, that's the one where they can either build a hotel or they can build an apartment with 103 units in it. So okay. They've been working with interested parties who would like to build a hotel there. So they are actively seeking that out. And whenever we have someone call us in the office who's like, I represent hotels, they're looking for a place, we always give them their direction, say, hey, this is a really good spot, it's already entitled, you could, you know, if you can make a deal with them. So okay. We're hopeful that we might get a hotel there, and that would really spur the restaurant. I talked to the owners that own the Starbucks lot and the lot where the other restaurant would be, and just had mentioned to them, well, what if we got a hotel there? Do you think you could get a better restaurant instead of a drive-through? Maybe we could get a sit-down one. And they were like, I think we might be able to do that. And we're like, well, if you want to talk, we might be able to do some incentives or something with the RDA, because we really would like to get a sit-down restaurant in this part of town.
And is the lot south of building 3, is that a developable piece of land?
No, lot south of lot 3 is UDOT's detention pond. Actually, okay. It's shared by UDOT and North Salt Lake, so it will always be a detention basin.
Thank you.
North Salt Lake and UDOT own that parcel.
Thank you.
It's a regional detention, so it's not just for these developments. It's water that comes down off the hill and goes into the detention that's at the bottom of Eaglewood Lofts, and then it flows out into this one before it goes into the rest of the storm drain system or percolates.
Thank you. And we can move to a motion if we're ready for that, or if there's any other questions or discussion. If there's any pieces of the motion that any commissioners want to talk about before we move to a motion, we can discuss any of those in detail or a motion.
Commissioner, I was waiting for the motion to come up. Go ahead.
Commissioner Holbrook, I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council the proposed amendment to the General Development Plan for Village Station with regard to Lot 11 at 445 South Orchard Drive, with the findings and conditions as detailed in the staff report.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. And do we have a second?
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you, Commissioner Marsh. And any discussion or comment from the commission on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 And any opposed? Okay, and it passes. All right, thank you for sticking with us through that, and we're excited to see how that continues to develop. Thank you for being here tonight. And we will move to agenda item 6, Annual Training for Open and Public Meetings Act.
Okay, we just have a short video for you to watch, so if you give me 1 second, I'll get it.
Don't start it.
Get it turned on.
Act upon government business. It includes the meeting. So what is the Open and Public Meetings Act? It's the state law that ensures government actions and deliberations are openly conducted. Before we continue, keep in mind that this video is an overview and exceptions may exist based on your entity type. We focus on local government, not state requirements. When in doubt, read the law and consult with your legal counsel. So what's considered an open and public meeting? It's when a public body quorum, also known as a simple majority, meets to discuss or act upon government business. It includes the meetings sometimes referred to as workshops or executive sessions. Regular meetings, public hearings, electronic meetings, and emergency meetings are all open and public meetings. Open and public meetings don't include chance or social meetings. A public hearing is a type of open and public meeting where citizens have a reasonable opportunity to speak. Public hearings happen when a government adopts a budget, imposes or increases taxes or fees, or transfers money from an enterprise fund. These meetings have extra notice and posting requirements and won't be addressed in this video. An electronic meeting is a type of open and public meeting that's convened electronically, such as via phone or the internet. Remember, the governing body must adopt a resolution, rule, or ordinance allowing and governing electronic meetings. OPMA adds additional requirements too. An emergency meeting may be held to discuss an urgent matter due to unforeseen circumstances. In order to hold the meeting, the best notice that's feasible is provided of the time, location, and topics to be considered. An attempt is made to contact all governing body members, and a governing body majority approves the meeting. An open and public meeting may be closed to discuss any of the following: a person's character, competence, or health, collective bargaining, litigation, certain real property transactions, including any form of a water right or water shares with specific restrictions, security personnel, devices, or systems deployment, investigations of criminal misconduct, and private or protected information per the Utah Procurement Code, including trade secrets. A closed meeting may be held only if a quorum is present and the meeting was properly noticed. 2/3 of the governing body present at the meeting need to vote yes to close a meeting. Quick math lesson. 2 divided by 3 equals 66.7%. Let's say your governing body has 5 members present at the meeting. If 3 out of 5 members vote yes, that equals 60%, which is not equal or greater than 66.7%, which means you're 1 member short and would need 4 out of 5 members to vote yes. During a closed meeting, a governing body can't interview someone applying to fill an elected position, discuss filling a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, discuss the character, competence, or health of a person whose name was submitted for consideration to fill a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, approve any ordinance, resolution, rule, regulation, contract, or appointment, or take a vote, unless it's a vote on a motion to end the closed portion of the meeting and return to an open meeting. When a governing body closes a meeting, the following must be publicly announced and entered into the minutes of the open meeting at which the closed meeting was approved: the reason or reasons for holding the closed meeting, the location where the closed meeting will be held, and the vote of each member of the governing body either for or against the motion to close the meeting. If a closed meeting is discussing a person's character, competence, or health, or security personnel, devices, or systems deployment, or several other exceptions, mostly related to state bodies or project entities, no recording or minutes are required. However, the presiding member needs to sign a sworn written statement stating such. If the closed meeting is held for any other reason, a recording must be made, which includes date, time, and place of the meeting, names of members present and absent, and names of all others, except where disclosure would infringe on the confidentiality necessary to fulfill the original purpose of closing the meeting. Regular open and public meetings require 24 hours notice. The public notice includes the meeting agenda, date, time, and place. Public meeting agendas need to include reasonably specified topics to be considered, with each topic listed under a separate agenda item on the meeting agenda. The governing body may not consider a topic in an open meeting that wasn't on the agenda. If a new topic not on the agenda is raised by the public during an open meeting, the governing body may discuss the topic. However, final action may not be taken on the new topic during that meeting. Additionally, entities holding regular meetings scheduled in advance over the course of the year need to provide annual notice of the entire year's meeting schedule. The notice must include date, time, and place for each meeting.
Notice is posted on the public body's website, in a public location such as the location where the meeting will be held, and on Utah's public notice website in accordance with Utah Code 63G-30-102.
Typically, posting on the public notice website is done by the records officer, recorder, or clerk. However, it's the governing body's responsibility to ensure notice is provided. State Archives has prepared a training manual and quick guide for owners and posters, as well as training videos that can be accessed at their website, archives.utah.gov. Written minutes and a recording are kept of all open meetings, with few exceptions. Written minutes include the date, time, and place of the meeting, the names of members present and absent, the substance of all matters, names of citizens providing comments, the substance of the comments provided, any information a body member requests be entered into the minutes or recording, and a record by individual member of each vote taken. A body with elected members must record each vote in list format by category for each action taken by a member, including yes votes, no votes, and absent members next to each member's name. A recording must be a complete and unedited record of all open portions of the meeting from beginning to end, and be labeled with the meeting date, time, and place. All or any part of an open meeting may be independently recorded by any person in attendance if the recording does not interfere with the conduct of the meeting. Pending minutes means written minutes of an open meeting in draft form subject to change before being approved by the public body that held the open meeting. Pending minutes must contain a clear indication, such as a draft or pending watermark, that the governing body hasn't yet approved the minutes and that the minutes are subject to change until the public body approves them. Approved minutes means written minutes of an open meeting approved by the public body that held the open meeting. Entities must establish and implement procedures for the public body's approval of written minutes. Public meeting pending minutes, approved minutes, and recordings are public records under GRAMMA. Any individual who publicly presents information relating to an item on the public body's meeting agenda must provide a copy of the information for inclusion in the public record. Make pending minutes available to the public within 30 days. Within 3 business days after approving written minutes of an open meeting, make approved minutes and any public materials available at the Utah Public Notice website, the entity's primary office, and the entity's website. Within 3 business days after holding an open meeting, make an audio recording of the open meeting available to the public for listening.
Do you have any questions on the Open and Public Meetings Act?
Are you
going to test it? No. Pretty straightforward. We take care of all of those things, posting the minutes and the recordings, and Wendy's really good at that. I can, as the deputy recorder, also with one of my other hats I wear. I can post on that. Mackenzie can post on the website. So there's more than one person in the city that knows how to post them. If somebody's gone, we always meet those deadlines. So
thank you for managing all of that, because when it says the elected body should manage that, we appreciate you managing that, because none of us are making sure these public notices are happening.
We just tell you that we do it, and we
thank you.
We want you to know that we do it.
All right, and we can move on?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so we are moving on to agenda item 7, report on city council.
So at the last city council meeting last week, Heidi Smoot is our newest council member. So she and Elisa Van Langeveld and the mayor were all sworn in for their this 4-year term. With that, Heidi Smoot had been on our arts committee. So now she is actually going to be the council liaison to the arts committee. That was Suzette Jackson before then. But so she's going to take that place. Suzette's going to do the golf committee. And so Heidi will be on the Arts Committee, Audit Committee, and the Tree City USA. And then the City Council appointed Jean Montanaro, so our artist who did the awesome mural that we have. She's a new addition to our Arts Committee, so we're super excited for that. The WUI code was adopted by the City Council. They did not adopt a map yet, so staff is working with the fire district to come up with that map. The state did release their map, and the whole thing about the extreme high risk areas and those properties being charged an assessment, there are no properties in our county, except it's the closest one, like maybe up in South Weber area, there were a couple, but there are none in North Salt Lake. So when you look at the map online, you can see that it's like the houses and things that are up Immigration Canyon, a lot of places up in Morgan County, there were quite a few. And, you know, some places in Summit County are the closest ones, but there aren't any in North Salt Lake. So we don't have any of the high or extreme high hazard risk. That doesn't mean that we don't have risk in the city. We do have risk in the city. There are things that can be done. We want to make sure that when we adopt that map that it's not too overreaching and too cumbersome on the property owners up there, but we want to make sure that whatever we do adopt, that we do something to help reduce the risk of wildfire in our hillsides areas, and that's the whole purpose of that. But we will bring back, when we have that map drafted, we'll bring that back before the Planning Commission. There'll be a public hearing. Just plan on that being a really big public hearing, I suspect, because we'll have to notify every single property owner that's going to be included in the WUI area. So think of people that have houses that back onto a draw. Those would probably be included in that, because there's a lot of fuel there that can feed a wildfire, and you don't want it to come, the fire to come up the draw and then start their house on fire and then start their neighbor's house on fire and the next neighbor's house on fire. That's what we're trying to avoid with that. So that's where we stand with that. On your upcoming meetings, in 2 weeks, we will have Mark Morris here as our consultant who's drafting our urban design standards. He's going to give you a progress report and do a visual preference survey with you so you can kind of give him some feedback on the different design considerations for our town center. And looks like we'll be, hopefully, in March, have the general plan draft.
Awesome.
The one we got 6 months ago was not good enough. We kind of had to have a little come to you know what meeting with them, and they have gone back to the drawing board to get us a better draft of that. So we're looking forward to that. Staff is supposed to have that in our hands in February to review before we bring it to you. But that's the kind of the timeline right now, is that the general plan draft will be coming back to you in February. And then we have some other applications on deck. We'll be doing a condominium plat for the Clifton North commercial area. We have that application in. And then just an update on the 130 East NSL Lofts. I met with the developer yesterday. He's ready to sign the development agreement and execute the final zone change. Yay!
Wow.
And pull the first building permit. They'll start building on the east parcel first, because they can't carry the debt service on two buildings at the same time. Plus, they'll need the other lot to kind of stage while they're building on one lot. So they'll build the east building first, and then they'll start on the west building. But they're ready to.
So the east building is the one that butts up to Atlas, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And the west building is the one with the commercial in it. Okay. What they explained to me is they build the east one first, then the construction loan will go into the permanent financing, and then they can get the construction loan will cover the other building so that they're not carrying debt service on two without any cash flow. And they'll be able to rent these apartments and start the cash flow while they're building the
second
building.
Were the amenities in that building, the gym and stuff?
And the amenities were in that building, yeah. So the residential amenities are in that building. The commercial uses are in the west building. And what that will also help is that getting the residents moved into the east building will help find tenants for the commercial, because there's people there that will actually, you know, go to a deli or go to a salon. They'll be located in that building. So whatever the commercial use are. So we're excited to finally see that break ground.
Great.
What were the final heights or stories on each of them?
Three stories. Yeah, three stories.
That's great. And then did we have a calendar of meetings for 2026, and did we do any accommodations for November dates, or we have not seen that yet?
I forgot to bring that. I'll bring that for
Fantastic.
You next time.
I just thought I had missed it, which is most likely. So
It's already posted online too.
Yeah,
I think.
The city council approves it's online. Okay. But we can modify it if we need to.
Was there
I think
any
there's just one date
November?
Where there's it's something to do with elections where we had to move it to a Wednesday instead of a Tuesday, one of the meetings.
I can just look that up online. You do not need to attach it.
I think there is one in July that was a Wednesday.
Yeah, maybe because of 24th was on a Tuesday or something. I know it's not the 4th of July. It's not on a Tuesday this time because it's on a Friday, I think.
Okay, great.
Sherry, can I ask a couple of WUI-related questions? Come on.
Sure.
Topic. I missed the whole last meeting. I'm so excited for it. But so when did the state come out with their risk maps for this whole thing?
When did they come out with it?
Yeah, did it come out prior to the end of the year?
They did. They came out it might have been just a couple days before Christmas when we got the email saying that it had been released and posted. It was a little bit confusing because the link they sent, when you clicked on the link, if you didn't go over to the column on the left-hand side and unclick the two layers, they had two layers on, you would see a different layer than the layer that's actually the extreme high hazard layer. So you had to turn that one off in order to see the extreme high hazard. It just had the regular hazard.
And then this really isn't applicable, but if it's an unincorporated area, is the county doing the same thing that the city's doing?
So counties were required to adopt the Wildland Urban Interface Code back in 2005.
Okay.
So counties have been administering the WUI.
But are they going to have to join this whole fee assessment program and all that? No.
So we won't have to do any because there aren't any in the county that the county treasurer will have to
collect. And then do you really have the latitude to change from what the state mapped? I mean, do you?
We don't change the state map at all.
You can't change? No, nope. But when you adopt...
So if you think about
the city code.
Yeah, if you think about WUI, and we said that the risk of wildfire hazard is on a scale from 1 to 10. So the state map identifies everything that's a 10. And then our job is to identify on our WUI map between 8 and 9 or 7 and 9, whatever we decide. So that's our role, is the next levels down. The highest level was the state map. That's the easiest way to think of that.
Yeah. And then it's pretty obvious you drive around what you suspect might be. You mentioned the draws, which you and I have talked about those before. I'm assuming that to the extent that when a subdivision was platted and it had covenants that set aside scenic easements made to preserve a stand of vegetation, oak brush, whatever, that those can be modified and those can be taken out if this type of risk and regulation drives that type of change? And is there a process that would have to go through to, you know, negate the scenic easement so you could take out the brush?
So I think we have to look at it on a case-by-case basis, but there are things that can be done that still maintains the scenic easement, but clears out the brush. So it's really the underbrush. So if you can clear, my understanding, if you can kind of clear those ladder fuels out up to 6 feet under that. And our fire district has done some of these programs with Bountiful City in some of these areas. And once we establish the WUI, then we can apply for funding to go in and clean out some of these areas. And so we want to do a program where we can get a neighborhood together and say, okay, we've got this funding, and we bring in people who are expert in clearing property and help, so it's not just us trying to do it alone. But we'll have the funding to bring in the experts that can help clear those areas and remove those fuels and mm-hmm. create the defensible spaces. It's not perfect. We won't be able to do it exactly, but doing, as the fire chief, deputy fire chief, explained to the city council last week, if he can only get one thing, he just wants people to clear 5 feet away from their house. If you can clear that 5 feet away from your house, you've given yourself a great amount. And then the next year or the next few years, then work on between 5 and 10 feet, and then work, so it's not just a blanket tear down all and take out all the landscaping. It's make sure that your trees are pruned to 10 feet away from your house. Make sure that you've pruned up 6 feet on your trees that you have, so that there's not ladder fuels on the ground that tie into the tree that then start the tree on fire, that then start your house on fire. So it's really, there are certain things that we can do that are less impactful to the people that live in that neighborhood. When they had the fire up there in Summerwood a couple years ago, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, the fire district was working with some of the neighbors up there, and it was really a mixed bag. Like, half of the people really wanted to get in there and clean out everything, and half the people didn't want anything touched. They had planted all those trees around their house, and they want to keep all those trees around their house, and that's their own little private forest or whatever, So we're going to do the best we can. We're not out to try and come up with a program where we're going to go around and give people zoning violations and to clean up and stuff, but we really want to do it more as an incentive and try to work with identifying the areas that need the most attention, and then try to focus the resources that we can get to help make it safer for everybody.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I know the city's going to take a smart approach and be good, but I think doing all the stuff in advance is prudent. You can go to Fox News and see my interview on Fox 13 from last summer, where I had a crash course on doing all that. Anyway.
Yeah, I loved your story about the insurance company when you were having that fire at your second home, that they had actually sent out a crew to help create a defensible space in your neighborhood when there was a fire nearby. And I just thought that was pretty cool, because I can see that can save an insurance company a lot more money. It's a lot less to send somebody out proactively to help mm-hmm. clean out your gutters of leaves and clear some brush out of your property than it is to pay off mm-hmm. a claim that's the entire house is destroyed. And heaven forbid that somebody dies too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really is the end of the day. We don't want people to lose their life. Property is second, but we don't want the loss of our residents or their kids or their pets.
Thank you. All right. If there's nothing else, we can move to approving the minutes from December 9th. Thank you to Andrea for drafting those and any adjustments to the minutes as they were drafted from the commission, and if not, we can move to a motion.
Yes, I'm here, but I will comment. I read the meeting minutes, and they look great. They always do. However, I wasn't at the meeting.
Oh, someone's up. Our running joke is that Ron always approves the minutes, and then we just sit here petulantly and wait for him. So this might be your new job. When Ron is not in a meeting, you are the minutes. Actually, does that mean he can't make the motion either? Might not be able to. Because you weren't here. So and I can't make the motion because I'm the chair. So.
Commissioner Holbrook, I move that the Planning Commission approve the minutes for December 9th, 2025, with no changes.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook, in a second.
Commissioner Marsh, second.
Thank you. And all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. And they are approved, and we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrea.